Good evening, Palace fans from around the world. Welcome to the Red and Blue Review. My name is Gel Holyoake, and tonight I'm joined by a motley crew of panellists to discuss another 4 points from games versus Newcastle and Fulham. Firstly, welcome, Tim.
Good evening, Gel. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, mate. And Fergus.
Evening, Joe. Evening, everybody. Yeah, excited to talk about. It's been a good week.
Yeah. Plenty to talk about. And Paul.
Yeah, hi Joe. Hi everyone. Yeah, it's got lots to discuss tonight about some good results, good games, good performances. So yeah, it should be good.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, if we, you know, a run of four unbeaten games, three wins and a draw. Few, if any, would have given us a chance of recouping 10 points for those four games. I mean, you know, when we were talking about how many points we thought we'd get in April, and it definitely wasn't that amount. But yeah, so, you know, those three wins and a draw have ensured another season in the Premier League for little old Crystal Palace of our crappy stadium, which will annoy a few people, especially in down the south coast and other parts of South London. But so, firstly, let's get some more good stuff out of the way. Tim, you can cover off some very good news within the club.
Yeah, as I'm sure you're all aware, the ladies had their last game today. Bit of a damp squib because, to all intents and purposes, they'd already achieved promotion. But I do think we need to talk about it from the point of view of what an amazing achievement it's been. I mean, Laura Kaminsky came in last year, appointed from Charlton. This is the first time in 32 years that the ladies, Palace ladies, have reached the top flight. But they did it in style. I mean, they had the Golden Boot winner, Elise Hughes. But also just a few stats just to talk about it. Clean sheets 38%. They only failed to score in 10% of the games. The average possession for a game is 57%. Average goals per game 3.57. Goals for 50. Goals against 20. Amazing. I mean, yeah, today I think they weren't really at it, but they still got another point. But yeah, I think it's an amazing achievement for the ladies, considering as well how many new players, how many loan players, and how they've turned it around. So yeah, I think they deserve all the praise, and I hope the club get behind them properly now and invest in them and actually give them the backing that they deserve.
Yeah, absolutely. And what we'll do is we will cover, as we be the rest of the clubs involved with our football club, at the end of season show, we will cover off properly about the success of the ladies' side, and hopefully, you know, Tim can use his newfound connections within the club and get us interviews with certain people. I'm sure, you know, we can sort something out, so we'll cover that off properly and, like I say, give them the adulation that they so well, you know, so richly deserve. Talking about other parts of the club, our under-18s went up to Villa and beat them. And our 21s also went to Middlesbrough and beat them, 1-0 and 3-2 respectively. So, yeah, it's been a pretty decent weekend from Friday through to yesterday. Amazing, really amazing. If we go back to Wednesday we'll go back to the 2-0 win over Newcastle, a win that, I mean, to be honest with you, it's been a bit of a bogey side for us, Newcastle. I mean, in a way, we either scrape a result against them, mainly a draw if we can, or we get absolutely smashed. And we have, you know, we've had a few hidings off of them. They had a very strong side. I mean, they were talking about, I've been on a few of their pages and they said, oh, they've got players out. And I was like, well, we got players out. You know, we got the spine, a goalkeeper out, our first team keeper out, our first choice centre-back out, our first choice, you know, centre-midfielder out. So, yeah, it's not really not really going to take too many excuses off of Newcastle, but yeah, an amazing game. So what we'll do, we'll cover that one off. Ferg, you're gonna give that a bit of a go, and we'll cover the first half, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah. So I think there was one change from the West Ham game. Elise was benched and Ayew came in. We played our new 3-4-2-1 formation. It was interesting because Mateta had come into the game on top form, scoring 5 and 6. But Isak for Newcastle scored 10 and 11. So you're thinking, right, there's going to be some goals tonight because both the main strikers are on form. But we kicked off, and first half we were just, I mean, again, it was almost similar to West Ham. I just think Newcastle couldn't get out of their half. It's just great football to watch. So I think the first real chance, 12th minute, was a chance from Mateta. So Anderson passed the ball into Mateta, actually, which was Eze. Mateta knocked it out. Eze was on the left, cutting shot with his right foot, just went wide of the post. Really, really good chance. And then just after that, Walton had a shot, but it was straight down to Bradley's neck. So it's an easy save for him. This was an interesting thing, actually, because Ayew, he tried to catch a keeper out from quite a long distance out, and it was just narrowly wide of the post. Dubravka was obviously off his line and struggling a little bit. And Eze tried something very similar later on. But the first 20 minutes was interesting because it was all Palace. And I don't know if anyone noticed, but on the 21st minute, is it Guimaraes or Guimaraes, their midfielder? He went down right in front of the technical area, and Howe was off his bench and all the players are around him, and he's given them a right old tactical team talk because they hadn't been in it for the first 20 minutes. So that was interesting. He got up, he seemed okay, carried on, and literally a couple of minutes later, like I alluded to earlier, Eze, free kick. He's got a free kick close to the halfway line, and rather than just take a short kick, free kick like we normally would, he's tried to beat the keeper from the halfway line. But to no avail. But that seemed to be a bit of a theme. Obviously, Rasmus had a word with him, sort of said, watch that keeper. He's kicks coming off his line, catch him out. So again, interesting tactics. Ayew had a shot, which was straight at the keeper. I think the first and the only real chance for Newcastle first half, Isak, he was put through by Guimaraes and one-on-one. But Henderson, you know, was off his line like lightning. Really good block tackle, because he's bearing down on goal and you're thinking, oh my God, here we go. A great tackle. I think a lot of the commentators on TV, when you watch it back, they were suggesting that, was it a penalty? Wasn't it a penalty? But I think they were all, Newcastle rose-tinted glasses on, but it was a great tackle, never a penalty. Mateta was put through by Walton just after that. He was offside, but almost a fantastic finish. Smashes the ball against the crossbar, bounces out, and you're thinking, oh my God, could have been a great goal, but then the flag goes up. So, wouldn't have counted anyway. And then just after that, Eze, he broke into the box. And there was two or three Newcastle players around him. It was really difficult to see which one had the final touch. But he got brought down. And it went to VAR. And VAR looked at it and said, no penalty. And I think they suggested that Eze had kicked the defender rather than the other way around. So it's probably a fair decision. I think that was it for the first half. I don't think there was anything. I think there was two bookings for Richards and Ayew towards the end. And the interesting stat was for Newcastle, their XG was 0.1 for the first half, which I think is the lowest they've ever had against the team in the Premier League. So that says a lot about the new style of play for Palace. Yes, Joe, you wanted to come in.
Well, I think what Glasner has done is identify players that can hurt us. And it was pretty much what the Premier League had done to Wilf in previous years. You stop Zaha at all costs and you stop Palace. And I think the same is with Newcastle. You stop Bruno and you basically stop them as a team, because he's the creative player within their side. But Paul, was you at the game?
Yeah, every game, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, was it blatantly obvious that every time Bruno got the ball that Wharton or Hughes was on him immediately?
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously, we highlighted him as a... I actually had money on him getting booked the other night, because he's been on a... For the last 10 games, he's been on a two-game ban threat, and he's managed to somehow stop himself getting booked, which he gets booked every game, and... I was expecting the minute he was free from that, which he was the other day, to get that. But it was us, as you say, it was us going after him rather than the other way around. And yet you cut that off. We saw Newcastle take Spurs apart the week before with Gould and Isak, and it was Bruno pulling the strings there. And as you say, you stop him, and that's a large chunk of their creativity gone. So, yeah, it was a good tactic. And, yeah, it shows our new style. As I say, if we'd have been under Roy, they'd have just been told to sit 10 yards off him and just stand and not let him get past. But here, as you say, Joe, every time he got the ball, someone was on him. He had to get the ball away. And, yeah, it was another energetic display. And it was as Ferg says, it was probably as controlled a first half as I've seen Palace play for a long time. They didn't hurt us at all. And that's just a testament to the way this team is progressing, because normally... As you say, you're chasing him, whatever. But no, we looked in complete control all game. I mean, I didn't even notice Klein was playing, because he was so unneeded. And yeah, we were just causing them problems, and yeah, they couldn't live with it.
Yeah, I mean, I want your view as well, Tim, in a second. But I just would like to hear from everyone in the comments about the way that we're now, you know, we're closing down in the same fashion for a lot of the game now, not just certain sections, like Gallagher did. Do you remember when Gallagher did it, and then he encouraged other players to do it, and it made us more energetic. Tim, are you finding that in 10 games that Glasner's been in charge, that we're more energetic, that we are closing down? You know, it just definitely seems to be the way.
I think Graham, hi Graham, hey Ding. Better, by the way, mate. Hope you're okay. But I think he makes a very fair point in the comments. He said, I really think the key is that the players are enjoying the new style of play. And I think there's so much to that, because with the best will in the world, a manager can tell his players how to go out and play, but they're not going to do it if they don't buy into it. They're not going to do it if they can't see a benefit. And I think, you know, like Ferg was saying, even Glasner said after the game, Newcastle game, he was actually scared of how well we were playing in the last 30 minutes. And how can they keep this up? And you can see that the pressing now, it's not just one or two players that are pressing. You can see the team are doing it in banks of three or banks of four. I mean, we're going to the Fulham game later. You could see Fulham could not get that first half. They could do nothing. It's the same as a Newcastle game. So I think it's brilliant to see that these players under Roy, who wouldn't do it, look how well they're doing it now.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll keep an eye on the comments and get them. We'll bring some of them in a second. And just going back to, we'll go to the second half in a second, Ferg. But what you said about 20 minutes in, and Eddie Howe calls his players over, like proper, looks like he's giving them a bit of a bollocking and saying, sort it out. And it's a bit strange that the same thing happened yesterday, which we'll cover off. But, you know... same thing happened yesterday. It was it's a bit of a strange thing. And I don't know if any of you remember. Do you remember people sussed out that Southampton did it? When they were really under the cosh, they did it a couple of years ago and they got sussed out. What they did was they went for drinks breaks, and it was literally like a team meeting. But yeah, anyway. Right, second half. A much improved second half, really, from Newcastle. But the wrong result. So off you go, Ferg.
Yeah, so like you said, Joe, I think the first 10 minutes, Newcastle definitely, you know, came out and they were the better side for the first 10 minutes. I think probably that and maybe the last 5 minutes was their purple patch for the game. I don't think in between that they did much. But yeah, first 10 minutes, they're obviously getting back into the game. But then we score a sublime goal, I just think. And I know, Jill, I know we talked about it like before we came on the show, but are you? It's just a fantastic pass. But Anderson picked the ball up on the left on the halfway line, and he's knocked it into Eze, and Eze's put it into Mateta. Mateta, one touch to Ayew. Ayew, one touch back. There was four Newcastle defenders, and they've all stood in the line. They had no idea what to do. Mateta's clean through. He just slides it straight into the bottom corner. Bavgas, nowhere near it. Absolutely fantastic goal. Yeah, good job.
You're on mute, Joe.
You're on mute, Joe.
Because you're all right. I'm not a massive IU lover, so you know he's just not my favourite player. But that cushion volley for the 1-2 is the touch of his Palace career for me. Like, where has that been? I know he's scored great goals and stuff like that, but that is having a 60-degree wedge out of lofty grass and chipping it in. From, you know, it was such a, you know, the ball was fired at him by Mateta for the, you know, from his eight, fired into it to Mateta, fired into Ayew. He cushioned, volleyed it, but Mateta's had the wherewithal to go for the 1-2, and what smashes it in the bottom. Can you like what? Oh,
if De Bruyne, if that was De Bruyne and Haaland. Everyone be yeah. saying what the greatest goal of all time. It was just the same. It was perfect touch, perfect anticipation, and took all four out. And the other bit I loved about it is if you see a still from before the goal, Eze's celebrating before Mateta's even shot. I mean, that's the confidence in the team at the moment. It's great.
I can't believe that. And I'll come to you in a sec, Tim. I can't believe you said that, Paul, because I have told loads. I'd say to Nick, what as that ball to the camera is probably by the corner flag. Mm. And it's that view that you get of that play that you see as Ayew is about, not even, doesn't even, yeah. he hasn't even hit it, but as Ayew is about to cushion that volley through, Eze is standing, watching everyone. He's standing with his arms up. I got goosebumps about that. Tim.
Yeah, just speaking on that, I think that there's four comments that have come through that kind of encapsulate the team at the moment and the difference. Mark Callaghan, first one. Hi, Mark. Munoz presses up the pitch, so high up the pitch, he gives me a nosebleed. If the opponent gets past him, Klein's there to cover. Perfectly sums it up. Mark Whitaker, hi, Mark. Feels like daylight robbery getting Wharton so cheap. What a signing. He has been so creative. Perfect vision for that killer pass. Paul Hobden, it's great seeing the defenders taking shots rather than passing back. Shows confidence. And Colin Squires, the last one for now, just absolutely bang on. Anderson being made captain. Look how he's upped his game in the last, well, since Glasner's been there. All very good comments that I think perfectly sum up where we are at the moment.
Yeah, mate, you're right. So, the perfect 1-2 is 1-0, Berg.
It's 1-0. So, Newcastle, you know, for all their injuries, you know, they make substitutions and they bring on Wilson and Hall, you know, poor Newcastle, isn't it? And didn't really make much difference. I think the next significant thing was Elise coming on for Ayew, and Ayew really didn't look very happy when he was going off. But I like that. I like that about player because you know he'd set the goal up, and he obviously thought that you know he still had a part to play. So, and then I think the next main highlight was the penalty. To the potential penalty for Newcastle with Longstaff going through and Hughes kind of put his arm across him. Longstaff went down, very soft, but you could argue Hughes, you've seen them given. And it's gone to VAR and you're just praying, no, please don't.
just quickly, Tim, in the comments, to have a look at all the people in the comments, say whether it, don't rose tinted glasses. Right, I'm going to say I said pen. Right, who else said penalty? Paul, do you think it was a penalty?
Looks like Paul's frozen. Paul, you there?
Yes, Brian.
I'll jump in. I thought it was a penalty when it happened.
No, looking back, no penalty because he took a
At real time, the only thing he didn't do is he didn't grab him. If he'd have grabbed him, it would have been a penalty, but he's known for absolutely just going down too easy. What's the comment saying?
Hughes got on the wrong side. Rob Cranfield went down quicker than a Geordie Lass's knickers. I don't quite know what he means by that. Paul McNamara, no penalty. Kind of a bit of a mix, really.
I thought it was a penalty. And to be honest with you, like I say, rose tinted glasses, if that was us, I'd have been screaming penalty. No wonder they were annoyed. They could have gone either way.
Yeah, but then anyway, but that's what VAR's for, because he definitely took a pace before he went down. So VAR did the right thing.
I get it. I get it. But what I'm saying is, if that was City, if that was Haaland, it's a penalty.
Yeah.
Anyway, so getting back to it.
It wasn't a penalty. and it wasn't a penalty. We moved on. We're all celebrating. And just as a side note, I've watched a lot of the Newcastle podcasts afterwards. And they were very complimentary of Palace, and you know they said we deserved the win. But their general consensus, they could not believe that hadn't been given as a penalty because they're right in line with it. They've seen it. They all thought it was a penalty, but they still don't think they were won the game even if they'd got it. But there we go. 82 minutes, Eze came off, Schluck came on, Walton came off, Riedewald came on. And you're thinking, okay, right. So I always get nervous when Walton goes off now, I'll have to admit, because, you know, he's only a young kid. Surely he can play 90 plus 5 minutes. But I get Glasner's trying to protect the best players, you know. And we're winning the game, but it is only 1-0. 88th minute, so Mateta. So Longstaff again, he loses the ball and Hughes picks it up and runs forward with it, passes it out to Schluck on the left. Schluck passes it back into Hughes, he cuts it back. Mateta, left foot, bang, through to Bradner's legs and Palace 2-0 up. And I know we're going to come on to the Fulham game, but another player, Schluck, you know, he's coming on as a sub and he's having an instant impact in one way, shape or another. So all these players just seem to be elevated under Glasner. They're all, you know, he's found a way. He's found, you know, the best points, the strongest points, and he's obviously encouraging them. And they obviously feel that. And it's great anyway. But he was involved in a goal. Fantastic finish by Mateta, 2-0. Game over. I don't know if anyone wants to come in and talk about the goal.
Yeah, and 2-0, I mean, I thought it rather flattered Newcastle, to be honest with you. I think our last, you know, few results, I mean, you know, the West Ham game could have been, well, I said to my wife, 32 minutes with 4 up, I said, we could win this 7 or 8. They're that bad at the back, and we're that good going forward. But, I mean, as they could have had 5. He'd have had his proper shooting boots on against West Ham. He could have had 5. He'd have had his shooting boots on, you know, again, against Newcastle, he could have had 2 or 3. But anyway, what he does really well. So, yeah, a 2-0 win against Newcastle. Did you think we was going to get that, Tim?
Not so much before the game, because we did so well against Liverpool. West Ham, brilliant. Like you said, Newcastle's a bit of a bogey team. And I was hoping for a draw. I thought a draw, I'll be pleased with that. But it's not even the results. It's the way we're playing at the moment. That's what I find the most pleasing.
Yeah, no, I get it. But, Paul, so I thought maybe another game's so close, you know, and another high-intensity game, which we're going to have to beat Newcastle, or to get any kind of result against them. That's what we would have been. Are you surprised that we didn't, you know, The Premier League's always moaning about too many games, and when we had 3 games in a week, were you surprised at how the intensity was kept up?
No, I don't. Not for the Newcastle game. I think, as we'll venture on the Fulham game shortly. I think you could see it was paying in the second half of Fulham. It was telling a bit. But I think two games in 4 days should, especially when you're on a roll. You tend to not be quite as tired when you're playing that well and you're winning. But again, it shows the whole different in mindset in this team now, because under Roy, with 10 minutes to go, probably with half an hour to go, 1-0 up, we'd have sat back, we'd have invited. We were still trying to get that killer goal. And that's the whole difference, the mentality in this team. And you keep putting the pressure on the opposition and it pays off. And you grind them down, you make them do the running, they'll be tired. So, yeah, you're going to be better off like that. But so, yeah, I think for the two games, it was an amazing effort. And again, I think we always used to criticise Roy about subs. I mean, yeah, PP's taking Walton off. He's keeping people involved. They know they're going to get on the pitch. They know they're going to get a chance to shine. We're going to get fresh legs. He's using 14, 15, 16 players the game. And I think that's paying off, to be honest. And hopefully we'll pay off in not getting the silly injuries that we've had for overplaying people.
Yeah, mate, you're right. And you know what? That point that you said about, you know, two games in 4 days, Gary Lineker came out of a really good point. I watch his podcast, which is, you know, with him and Shearer and Micah Richards. And I remember Shearer and Lineker said that when you're winning, you just want to play football and you don't care whether it's a Saturday, a Wednesday and a Saturday. You just want to play football. So there does seem to be a lot of it, you know, our worst enemy sometimes of when we're on, you know, in the past, we've been on a little bit of a roll and then an international break has come along and then we've been crap after it or we've lost players but it does seem to have helped us playing so many games. Anyway, so talking about games, yesterday, Fulham. Are these the match stats for Newcastle?
I was just going to say, Joe, like, you know.
Well, go on in, read them out, mate.
Yeah, so I mean, they had slightly more possession, but we had 20 shots to their seven. Seven on target to their two. Seven corners to their two. Up until the Newcastle point, we still hadn't scored direct from the corner, which is a bit frustrating, but there we go. More fouls for Newcastle. There's one stat I just want to say, and I got this off Match of the Day, and I do apologise to everyone. I did actually watch it for the first time in I don't know how long. But they come up with a good stat for a change. They said that Mateta, so under Vieira, 45 games, 6 goals. Under Roy, 35 games, 5 goals. Under Glasner, 9 games, 8 goals. I mean, that is a transformation. It's unbelievable, isn't it? And if we can do that for all of our players, we are in a good place.
Really. Well, we'll talk about the Glasner effects after we've covered off another relatively decent performance yesterday at grounds where we either win or we draw. We don't get hammered that much by Fulham, even though they're a very good side, but a lot of good individuals. But yeah, yesterday, many of you were on a boat trip to Craven Cottage, which I'd seen the videos and that. A lot of merriness was had. So, Paul, if you can cover off the Fulham game, please, mate.
Yeah, so we got a lot to talk about after this anyway, so we'll rattle through this game a bit. But, yep, started off, as before, we looked at the team. Glasner had said in the press conference that Eze was a doubt and that Elise, because he'd not played the other day, was good to go. So it was not unexpected that that was the lineup. So basically Elise in for Eze, obviously Ayew kept his spot. I did read today, apparently, they were very close to actually starting him, but they figured actually we've got 9 days after this, there's no point. So he's obviously not badly hurt and he'll obviously be back for Man United, hopefully. But yeah, so the team we were expecting, the team has been doing so well. Started the game in much the same fashion, carrying on from the Newcastle game. The ball was all up the other end. Fulham couldn't get the ball out of their half, to be honest. And we were playing it around nicely in control again, and nice controlled football. Simple one-touch passing, and when they did get the ball off us, we went and got it back straight away, and they couldn't live with us again. And really, it's our own fault that we went in goalless at half-time. We had three, four really good chances. The first one, again, Walton, who's proving to be more of a ball player as well as a tackler and everything. He's got everything a bit, and he played a lovely through ball to Elise, and really, the whole away end thought goal, because the way Elise is playing and finishing a moment, you don't expect him to miss. And as they said, it was on his weaker foot, how weak his weakest foot is, I'm not so sure. But he should have scored. But yeah, put it wide, and you sort of think, yeah, well, okay, next one, put it in. Carried on, more chances. There was a great ball on the right. Mateta volleyed it over when he could have done a bit better. We then got a free kick, which Elise swung in. Richards again probably should have done better with the header, but put it over. And so, yeah, for the first 35 minutes, as I say, Fulham were on the rack, and it was just a matter of time before we got the goal. But as always, in Premier League football, the more chances you don't take, it gives the opposition confidence that we're not out of this, we can still get it. And they finally got in a half, to be honest, and they started doing. They had one little chance in Muniz, who was a bit of a handful. He scored a lot of goals recently. He went over the top and he tried to poke it past Henderson, who covered his post. I mean, it would have been an awful goal to concede. So it was a basic save and he did it. And then they had a header from the corner or something. But yeah, we went in half time. And yeah, we were all thinking, well, the game should be gone. And there were people saying, talking to Fulham fans, and they were saying they couldn't believe they were still in it because Fulham still has that end where there's no segregation. So people were mixing out there and talking, and yeah, they felt quite fortunate to be out there. So when they came out, they'd obviously had a rocket from Marco Silva. They came out with a bit of renewed energy. And as I said earlier, I think that was the sixth half in 6 days, and you could tell it was a bit more even. There was a little drop off in the intensity and the pace. And yeah, they then got a well-worked goal, they'll say. It was a bit hit and miss from our side of it. The marking at the end of it wasn't great, giving the ball away for them to cross. It's one of those frustrating goals. But, yeah, they must have thought that, they've got us on the rat. And, yeah, they started playing forward a bit more. But Glasner recognised there was a slight drop of intensity again, as we said. He made some changes. And, as we said, players that we were bringing on, that when Hodgson brought them on or when they played before, just had no impact at all. That they came in and they changed. People like Edouard, he came on and our attack instantly pepped up a bit. He had a good shot, was a good save, nearly scored, was causing a bit of hassle. And Hamada came on, ran at them. Obviously, Schlupp came on. And, yeah, we started to get a little bit of a grip again. But, obviously, time was running down. And then, obviously, with 4 minutes to go, Jeff Schlupp decided to put some rocket propellers on his boots. It was one of the hardest shots I think I've ever seen. And, yeah, it got to him at the edge of the box, and we were expecting the ball to be in the back of the stand, but he hit it. And as I say, the thump was something to behold, and then it just crashed into the net and everyone just went mad. And as he said, I think on Match of the Day last night, it's the best goal he's ever scored. And really, as you say, it was poetry in motion. Footballers can't hit a ball that hard deliberately, otherwise they would do it every time. It was just the technique, the bounce was perfect, the timing was perfect. Everything about that was just perfect, so the ball just arrowed in, and it was no more than we deserved. It would have been a travesty really if we hadn't got a point out of that game, and to get it with a goal like that was it was great. I mean, sparked a bit of a conversation with some of my chats on the stuff. To me, that's probably our goal of the season. I think Elise at Luton was probably up there for me to this point, but I think that's probably just pipped it for me. But yeah, so Ferg, I know you were there. I mean, what did you think when that it blasted into the net?
Well, I was like you. I thought it was going up into the stands. I was looking behind me to see where it was going to land. And then all of a sudden, it started to see the back of the net moving. You just think, oh, my God, what a finish. And I think it was Katie that was stood in front of me. And literally 30 seconds before, I said to her, don't worry. It's going to be 1-1. We're going to score. We're going to score. And she went, oh. And I went, Edouard. And I went, no, it'll be Schlupp. And 30 seconds later, I couldn't believe it. It's in the back of the net. I was fantastic.
I must admit, when he came on, I did think to myself, he's actually scored at that end for us before. And I thought, hopefully that was a moment. But yeah, I would never have backed him to do that.
I'm sorry, but I've had some severe hassle today because Wendy came on the boat trip and to Fulham away. And she needed a pee towards the end of the game. She said, look, I've got to go to the loo. I'll go out. I'll meet you outside on like 87 minutes. She did that. So she went and she missed the goal. So she didn't actually even see the goal.
Oh. That, I mean, I'm glad we got the point that we massively deserved. I got a metal detecting with a Fulham fan who is, you know, for a team that doesn't win anything and doesn't, you know, they're just Fulham. The family club Fulham. He really gives it. And my nephew, honestly, I don't even, his mum supports Man United, and my nephew didn't want to support Man United, and he supports Fulham. And he goes, I went a couple of years ago with him to the away, you know. And but I mean, that's for me. I mean, I'm, you know, there's a few of us that are, as you know, around my age and that. You'll remember a goal at Selhurst Park, scored by a guy called Tony Yeboah for Leeds United against Wimbledon. Yeah. And that's the hardest shot I've ever seen scored. We, you know, I'd say Schlupps was up there yesterday. That goalkeeper probably could have been standing a metre away from that, and I don't think he'd have saved it. I don't know if anyone's put a clock on it. They should do, because any time a big six club scores a bit of a belter, they go, oh, that shot was 72 miles an hour. But that was in the 70s. 100%. And we was never going to save that keep that keeper in a million years. And again, a lot of us have turned around and said, you know, Schlupp this and Schlupp that. Once again, it's like a, you know, it's like a like a up yours from him to you know to us. And very valid. But yeah, I mean, screamer is an overused word, but definitely not in that case, Paul.
No, I like the headline in the paper today. It was just unbelievable, Jeff, which I thought was about wrong.
But, perfect.
But yeah, it was like a bullet. And I'm not his biggest fan, as people on here know, but you have to give him credit. He's come on in the last few games and he's impacted. He set the goal up, the second goal against Man City, which, okay, was a consolation. He had a part in Mateta's second goal the other day. And this is what we've always wanted from these players. You want people coming off the bench and having an impact. And as we say, it's the Glasner effect. He's got players bought into this thing. I saw he said the other day, Mateta, you need players to, as Tim, I think, said earlier, as we've all said, you need players to want to do that. And Mateta's ringing people up and saying, can I do this in training? Can I do that? So once
you we're going to cover this off. We're going to cover the Glasner effect off in a minute. Just quickly, I just saw John Knox. He said, did you see Adam Wharton's reaction? I think he went like that, right? Yeah. Almost exactly the same as the England fast bowler with the catch that got took in the slips off of him.
Broad.
It was an England fast bowler. I can't remember his name. And in an Ashes game a few years back.
That's the wrong spot,
Joe. No, it was a catch, but he did the same thing. Oh my God! It was one of them moments where people that are involved in the game, even people involved like Wharton, is like, oh my God, I don't. And you see him, you know, I think the guy could score himself, and he would. It'd just be, it's a goal. Yeah, all right, lovely. Thanks. Let's get back to the halfway line. He doesn't seem to be the person that's...
It's great how many head-in-hands moments we've got. There's a picture of Eze doing his scissor kick against West Ham, and the ball boy on the side of the pitch is sat there like this as well. It's great.
I don't think I said, oh, my God, about Palace as much as I have in the last 2 weeks. You know, we just go, like the Liverpool goal, I just went, oh, my God, 21 passes. Oh, my God. Like, and the thing is, because it's such a run, and we've beaten the teams that have been involved in, you know, running for Europe. They've been big games. We've beaten big teams. I think what it's done, it's gained traction. And when things gain traction, once you're in the news, sometimes it's hard to get out of it for either the right or wrong reasons. But ours is all for the right reasons. And it seems to be a lot of players or a lot of people on our taking notice of what we're doing. And it's in the style. I mean, the one such football is ridiculous. Tim.
And look how many, look at the players we're still missing, not from our main team. And we're still playing like we're playing.
Yeah, so. I mean, we've already said that, you know, when you've got the spine of Johnston, who was our first goal, you know, first team goalkeeper, and then Gaye, and then Decore, and then we've had Lerma out as well. I mean, that's four players that probably would be playing. You know, they would be in the first team if they weren't injured. So,
I think yesterday, Joe, what I liked about it was, that's the first time we've gone behind in quite a few games. Yeah. And we played three games in a week. And we did look tired second half. You know, we did look like a team that had played three games in a week. But we just never gave up. We just kept on going. Fulham had a little bit of a purple patch. And then that last 15 minutes, you're just thinking, you know, yeah, but we're going to get a goal here. We're going to get a goal. They just didn't give up. And that's another thing that I noticed yesterday that I really enjoyed watching about Palace was just we don't deserve to lose this game. We're not going to lose.
Do you know where that comes from? Yeah. That comes from team spirit. And that case, Jeffrey Schlupp, he said in his interview, he said, you could tell we didn't want to lose that game. We weren't going to lose that game. And that's team spirit, and that comes from the manager.
Yeah, I mate, you're right. I mean, it does. But it also comes with everybody being involved as well. That's the thing. But let's get on to it, because we've used it, we've paraphrased it two or three times already, the Glasner effect. I'll tell you what we do. We'll cover just quickly, Paul, cover off the stats from yesterday.
Yeah, again, similarly to the Newcastle game, we had just slightly less of the possession, but we dominated the shots on targets, the corners. Yeah, as I say, it was another very good performance. And if any team was going to win it and deserve the 3 points, it would have been us. And as I say, it shows we're not scared to go runs and play our football.
Yeah. Do we have the Premier League record for the least amount of shots in four or five games in a row or something? Yeah. 34 shots in two games, the last two games. 34 shots in two games. It's ridiculous. But anyway, so the Glasner effect. So I'll start it off, and then again, I'd like to have people in the comments as well. Klein. Now, and I'm going to blow my own trumpet here, because I have said this for years and years, that my dream set up at Palace was 3-5-2. I always thought that 3-5-2, I saw Alex Ferguson play, and if it's good enough for Alex Ferguson, it's definitely good enough for us. But whether we've had the players to actually do that in the past or not is a different thing. It now definitely looks like we do have the players. Nathaniel Klein. Usually gets the ball, shits himself with it. He either wants to go sideways or backwards, or he loses it. He has been a revelation in the last few games. I think he's basically under orders of do not pass backwards. Don't care what you do with it, just don't go backwards. And even though he looks very hurried, he looks a different player under Glasner. So I'm really, really happy to see that he is settled in that space of a back three that actually looks comfortable. Paul, tell me about Chris Richards.
Chris, again, we bought him for a lot of money. He didn't really get a chance under Vieira orders, but he was always in. I think he plays in a back three in Germany. He was always the third centre back, never going. And he was the reason, I think, a lot of people said we should play three centre backs when things weren't going well last year with Hodgson and all this sort of stuff. You've got an international player who's played in the Bundesliga, sat there, and go and put him in there. And again, I think the key of the whole system, and I said this when it first came in. Daniel Munoz is the key to this whole system. You can play wing backs, but if you've got Joe Ward or Nathaniel Klein on the right wing, as good as they are at their defending, it doesn't work. Munoz is everywhere. He's all up and down the pitch. And as you said earlier, Joe, when you have a player like that, it's infectious. It gets the rest of the team going. So when he's up, down, on the left, on the right, like Gallagher, the whole rest of the team do the same. And people like Hughes and Walton, all these people, they're buying into this. And when you've got Munoz going up and down, you don't need a winger, which means you can move Elise in a bit. So same on that side. So you've got your three up front now rather than one lone front man with two wingers stuck out. And we're now even getting Mitchell. Mitchell, who's always been a fullback, he's being told. You could see Glasner other day at Fulham. He was telling Mitchell up, 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 and play it up as a winger. And the system is what is working in that respect, and it's allowing different parts of the pitch that function so much better.
Well, let's eulogise about players individually rather than trying it three or four at once, because I think that what we've done in the last, 6 weeks or so, especially the last four or five games, deserves to be given the credit. Ferg.
Yes.
When it comes to... Oh, do you know who I was going to give you? I'm going to, because he's a favourite of mine. But sort of, I'm going to give you Mateta because you've done the stats on him, all right, about his games under under Vieira, his games under. But I always, he reminds me a little bit of Benteke, right? Without the yellow cards. Every time Benteke went up for a header, he seemed to get a yellow card. Mateta seems in a game now where you can hardly touch anyone because they'll go screaming on the pitch and you'll get cut. You know, he doesn't seem to get, he smashes people. Well, I mean, he's always been egg, but his touch now, he's definitely changed.
Yeah. I mean, I think Benteke, I think under, you know, when Benteke was playing, it was probably high balls and he was jumping up with defenders and their, you know, elbows and heads and stuff like that. Mateta, we're playing a different style of football now. I think we're playing it into feet. He can hold the ball up really well. I mean, that's definitely improved. The players that he probably didn't have under Vieira or Hodgson supporting him. So when he gets that ball, he can knock the ball off. Like the Ayew Mateta goal against Newcastle. He didn't have that. So I think he was a little bit frustrated. But under Glasner, that's all changed. That high press, he's got options. He can hold the ball up. He can lay it off quickly. And he can go. And he knows that he's going to get the ball back. And he's finding those positions. He's found an extra yard of pace from somewhere. I don't know from where. But, you know, the whole team looks fit. And I know there's lots of people in the comments that have said, you know, the whole team in general looks fitter. But Mateta, for me, you know, when he broke clear against, I think it was Liverpool, you know, when he ran down and he was unlucky and it was cleared off the line, the goal he scored against Man City, you know, these centre-backs for Man City, you know, they're not like noddy defenders like, you know, you might be playing Luton or Burnley. These are top-quality defenders and he's found extra pace from somewhere. It's just the transformation from Mateta under Glasner has just been unreal. And long may it continue.
Oh, there's an enjoyment about Mateta's game you can see as well. It's confidence, he's scoring goals, he's enjoying. There was a moment the other night at the Newcastle game, just down in front of me, we had a throw on and Dan Byrne was marking Mateta. And it was hysterical really, because Mateta was rolling round in one way, rolling him round back, and Dan Byrne was just looking at him thinking, what are you doing? It was quite comical watching it, but he just wouldn't stand still on him. And he wound him up so much the ball came in, and then sure enough, Byrne fouled him. We got the free kick and everything. And as I say, he's asking people to do stuff in training, and he has a freedom which I don't think he had under Roy. He was told to stay in the middle, do this sort of stuff. And like all the players, they're thriving under this, and it's great to see. And as you say, any striker who's scoring goals will be happy. And yeah, as we say, Ferg, long may it continue. And he's getting the supply, and he's getting the plaudits.
I think we've lost Gel, so I'll pick it up. What I should have said was, he's fantastique. Is that what he says? Fantastique. Yeah. Into the camera. Yeah. Tim, what do you think about, let's pick Hughes under Glasner. How do you think Hughes is?
I'm so happy to have to eat massive humble pie over several of the Palace players over the last few weeks. Mateta one, Hughes being another. There was a period of time not so long ago where a very useful squad player, but he was making mistakes. He seemed to be off the pace a bit. He didn't make the right decisions. But the last few games especially, his mop-up play, even his going forward play, his hunger has really helped us out. So I think Hughes has definitely improved, whether it's fitness is part of it. But again, whether he's buying into what everybody else is buying into. So I think Hughes has definitely improved.
It was man of the match against Newcastle, I thought. He was just absolutely awesome. Yes, Paul?
Looking at some of the comments, it's quite interesting to see, because it shows how well these fringe players are coming in and playing, because a lot of people are saying, the last few weeks we've shown we can afford to lose Mark Gaye. Now, who would have thought we could say that a year ago? I mean, he's an England international player, and we're prepared to sacrifice him because people like Lerma have stepped back and gone in, has done a great job at centre-back. Richards is doing a great job at centre-back. Ward or Klein, whenever they've gone there, they look great. So the fact that we've got these players coming in, doing jobs to a level where we can say we can sacrifice a 70 million England international is testament to just how well they're doing and how well they're being coached, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard you guys talking about Hughes. That was going to be my next one, to give that to Tim. I mean, even to the point where, like you say, the fringe players, Gyro sat on the bench for months, and he's getting a chance, even though it's only late in the game. I think he is a good swap for Wharton if you want to bring Wharton off. But I mean, let's eulogise about some of the players that really have. I mean, we all know what Eze can do. Eze is special. I mean, we have discussed who we think is more important to the team, Eze or Elise. Although Elise does give us something. I can't put my I don't think he can do it all on his own. That's the thing. Elise is very much a team player, but Eze seems to just be able to do everything on his own. You know, he's got quick feet. He's got a great turning circle. He's strong. He's amazing player, and I've said for ages, and I think he is destined for greatness. I really do. I think Wharton, and again, I heard Wrighty say something today about some, but I think Wharton is a Rolls Royce. I've said it before. He is absolutely going to. I reckon he's going to be one of the best 20 million quids we've ever spent. He is an unbelievable player. His calmness personified. His accuracy and being able to read play and set up play is almost akin to what we've not had for either a very long time, if ever, Paul.
To look as at home as he does after just 10, 11 Premier League games, it shows what a quality player he is. He's settled. In some of these players you bring up from the Championship, they need a couple of months to get to the pace. But he's stepped in, he's taken the mantle, and he's thriving on it. As you say, as we said earlier, he's creating. He's not just a stopper. He's doing everything a Premier League midfielder should do. And as you say, for £20 million, I think we're going to look back in the future, and that's going to be just an absolute bargain.
Just on that, Paul. 22 million or whatever we pay for him, he's worth 80 now.
Yeah, as you say.
He's only played 10 games. He's something else. He's a future England midfield player, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's class.
I do think we need to talk about, though, is the Henderson. Looking in the comments, there's quite a few different people that have been having to and throws back about our goalkeepers and do we need to replace Henderson? I mean, I've got my thoughts on Henderson, but I'd be interested to know what the rest of you guys think of him and compare it to what guys in the comments say.
Luckily, Joe's on mute.
Yeah, probably.
As he's on mute, I'll say I think he's a good second choice keeper. I think when Sam's fit, Sam will play. And we've obviously got budgets to stick to, and we want to buy players around the squad. So to me, if Sam's fit, Sam's going to play. He's the better goalkeeper, but he's a good second choice goalkeeper because you're going to spend 30, 40 million to get a better second choice goalkeeper, and I'd rather spend that elsewhere.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. I mean, I've been critical of him of late. I mean, I thought the 5-2, you know, helped him out, West Ham. I thought the first goal, he bottled it. If he'd have come out, he gets it. That is not a goal. And then obviously takes his eye off it. And he has a real howler there. If we're leading 2-0, and then that happens, and they get one goal back, we're under huge pressure. I know, there's no point, but if we're going about goalkeepers, then I would prefer, Sam in goal. But having said that, I thought the last couple of games, he has done well. And the only thing that frustrates me, and I say this all the time to Nick, is that when Eze's playing, Eze's clever enough to not stand still when the goalkeeper gets the ball. And he's quick enough to be able to get out to the left. It's the player. You know, he allows the other team to set up. And if he was a bit further, you know, like when we got caught out against Arsenal, David Raya bowls the ball out big time to the right hand side. They cut in. The ball comes across and they score. Arsenal scored their fourth goal against us or whatever. I think that's, It's hard to be critical when we're on such a, you know, when we're playing all right, but to be, you know, I prefer Sam in goal.
He seems to buck the trend of the current goalkeeping philosophy. Seems to be you don't have to be a very good goalkeeper if you can use your feet, whereas he seems to be the opposite. He's not that good at distribution, but he's actually a very good shot stopper. He's a bit suspect, I think, crosses, he doesn't command his ball. I think he's a very good shot stopper, but yeah, he seems to be the opposite way. Other teams, it's all like people like Onana and Edison. They don't care if they can save shots or not. They just want to kick the ball out.
But the thing is, he's young enough. Yeah, he's young enough to be taught to come for crosses. Come for crosses, you get bashed, you get a free kick. It's as simple as that. He needs to build up that confidence. You can see it drain away from him sometimes.
Yeah.
But when he made that save against Newcastle, when, you know, one on one, and he saves it, hits his chest, goes out for a corner, and he's there's the usual fives on the hands and stuff. So he's definitely pumped, but it is what it is at the moment. But again, you know, we have no choice on certain positions. So as long as it's not to, but anyway. I'm going to go to one more player because I know we've talked about it a bit. And like I said, I've bashed him for years. But I think Ayew, once he sits down and reflects in the cold light of day that he isn't going to play a whole game anymore. Let's face it, there's two players that play out on the right-hand side, Jordan Ayew and Michael Olise. And I don't care who you are, if you turn around and say you want Jordan Ayew out on the right instead of Michael Olise, you need a punch in the face, all right? Because he is not better than him, but he is an admirable replacement either before or after. So if you're going to give Ayew 60 or 70 minutes, because that game warrants Jordan Ayew being out there and being egg, then that's what it needs. And if we're trying to protect Olise, but if we are we are desperately in need of points, we're chasing a game, you have to have Michael Olise. But it seems, and again, like you said, when he was bought off, the other game, he had the right arm, you could see. And the camera had to get off him quickly because he was chuntering to himself. And I thought, they better get off him because he'll be saying something that you don't want to see. And like you say, you like to see it. But go on, Paul.
I actually think Jordan Ayew is going to be one player who will suffer with Glasner's system in that... Under Hodgson, he was always the out ball. We needed pressure relieving. You gave it to him, he held it, he won a free kick. Now, this team is not designed to sit and soak up pressure. We're more on the offence. So we don't want to be stopped and getting winning free kicks and things like that. So that could be a bit of an undoing for him, unfortunately. But as you say, if he's going to adjust his game a bit and do what he did the other day and start creating first-time balls and things like that, he'll be fine. But yeah, as you say, for a few years now, he should be a squad player. And he's hopefully be a good impact person on the bench to come on. Because obviously, as you say, Eze and Olise should have those positions tied up.
You're absolutely right.
He's quite a good goalkeeper, Gel.
Hey?
I've heard he's quite a good goalkeeper.
But what I'm saying is credit where credit's due. Like I said, the deftest of touches was, I could believe that it was him. And what if he's had that in his locker? What I don't know why we've not seen it before. Maybe it's a confidence thing. Maybe, you know, he's thriving under this, you know, this 3-4-3 or whatever, you know. The pressing, I think we're playing 3-4-3 or we're playing 3-5, whatever we're playing, it seems to be working for him. But, you know, I think what will help him is to know that, you know, a bit like Kabai. I thought Kabai near the end of his, you know, as he got older, he was a really good 65-minute player. And if you've got the desired effect of him, you know, the 65 good minutes of him, generally we were all right, you know. So I think that's what he needs to do. If he accepts that, I think he'll, you know. And also, what we never had under Hodgson was we had, like you say, 12, 13 players, and that's why we were getting so many injuries. Now we're 16 players. We, you know, they're using all the subs. which is bringing other players that would never, you know, that haven't had any minutes back into the fold. And I think that's only you know, good for the team, good for the morale, good for players getting minutes. Ferg.
I was just going to say, with all this positivity, you know, we've got, you know, when we've got players back that are currently injured, it's going to be really hard to pick a first team, isn't it? You know, because there's so many players doing so well. But, and it may be a controversial one, but what does that mean for our youngsters? The Ratsakis, the Ozos, Franca, you know, are they going to get an opportunity now? Or next season, does that look even more of a challenge for them to try and break into that first team?
Yes, basically, yes. But if they're good enough, they'll thrive on that challenge and they'll rise to that challenge and they'll force their way into the team.
Who do we think will break through?
I think Ozo breaks through. But then saying that, Ozo's more in the centre. And does he get? I mean, more's the point. If the Decore, because of his injury, season long injury, he doesn't get sold at the end of the year, Liverpool call on their interest in him. I mean, that then is Hughes, Decore, and Wharton. I mean, at the moment, does Decore get in? He doesn't get in front of Wharton for me. Does he get in front of Hughes, like he used to?
Yes.
You know, what about Lerma?
Yeah.
Where does Lerma come in? Who does he? You know, I mean, I know he's a first team player. You know, Gaye doesn't go. What happens then if Gaye doesn't go? Right, because we want too much money for him, and he decides that he's going to take pay rise with us and stay with us, and then Richards goes out to right back. Do we go to a back four and keep Klein, or do we go to a three with three centre backs? Or does Richards go back to being cover for Anderson and Gaye again? I mean, what a massively brilliant problem to have. We haven't had that for ages. Yeah.
Glasner, it's a headache for him, but it's a nice headache, isn't it?
Could be Klein and Ward's last seasons for us, in which case you've got Richards, Gaye and Anderson as a back three if Gaye doesn't go. That there's possible solution to that.
I don't think we get rid of Ward and Klein. We get rid of either or. We can't get rid of both. Otherwise, we'd be getting rid of two right backs. And we need, no matter what our role they are, we need experienced cover in every position. And that's what we don't have. I mean, the kid that we got, you know, that came in and did nothing, Nathan, what's it? Mason Ferguson. I mean, it doesn't look like he's going to break through. Otherwise, he would have been. I mean, he's nowhere near it, is he? But yeah,
just want to cut the comments, Joe. Just Joan Wells has put Glasner says Ratsakis not ready yet, so you know he's not seen something, but he has been out injured for quite a while. We've got Paul Holden's mentioned Luke Plange. You know, that's another one that we bought that, you know, had potential but seems to have died off. Colin Squire says Ozo biggest problem, no pace. Yeah, and then other people mentioning the players that are coming back, you know, like Decore and Lerma. Yeah, so it's
going to be all right. We'll close out with for the first time in a long time, as we're coming to the end of another season. It seems to be, you know, a really good problem to have. So we've got three games left. The 6th of May, Monday night, Man United at home, 8 p.m. kickoff. Then the following Saturday, we've got Wolves away, 3 p.m. The last 3 p.m. kickoff for us this season, and a Saturday game. And then lastly, we've got Villa at home, Sunday, 4 p.m. So, just quickly, let me indulge myself. My son-in-law is a Man United fan. His family are Man United fans. Had season tickets and everything before his dad got ill. And so, yeah, they're proper Man United fans. And my granddaughter's just coming up to 5. And I got a couple of tickets the other day. Paid a lot of money for them. for the Man United game, and I said, take little Violet with you. So go and watch Palace, because he does go and watch Palace games as well, my son-in-law. And he said, I am so fucked up with Man United, I don't want to go. And I was like, well, I bought you these tickets to take your daughter to my granddaughter to her first ever game, Man United Palace. And he went, well, why don't you take her? No, I didn't even have the bottle to ask, because it's not really Ben, my son-in-law, is going to say no, it's my daughter. But I used to take my daughter to Palace. So that's my granddaughter's first game is Man United. So I'm going to sit at the back for the first little bit and see if it doesn't scare the pants off her, the noise, because it's not far from the HF and everything. And if she likes it or she doesn't like it, then we'll go down and sit with Nick at the front. But yeah, so that's me indulging myself a little bit. Three games left, Man United at home, Wolves away, Villa at home. I'm going to say we get 4 points out of that. Because I think Villa are a very, very good side. I think we beat Man United. I think we draw Wolves. What say you, Tim, and what say everyone else in the comments that you can read out in a second after the other two? Tim, you can read them out in a minute, but what do you say?
God damn it, I'm going to go 6 points.
You lunatic.
Paul? I'm actually going 7. I'm on the positive train. I think we'll beat Man United. I don't think there are any great shakes. I think we'll win at Wolves. I don't think there are any great shakes. And I think we'll get at least a point at Villa, simply on the basis that I think Villa will already have fourth wrapped up that day.
Okay, Ferg?
So I'm going to go with Dan Garlick. I'm going to go with Leon Saunders. I'm going to Tony Quinn. I'm going to go 7 points. I think I can't see us losing to the end of the season, honestly. I think we'll beat Man United.
And finish we'll above the scum.
And I think we'll draw with Villa. And we'll finish above Brighton. Yes. And that will be a great season.
That would be a glorious way to finish.
Dad, if we could have won yesterday, because they got royally bumped today. Did you see Dunk getting twisted left, right and centre today? Oh, I only saw the goals, but it was joyous, absolutely joyous. Oh, well, listen, we've had a slightly extended show, just crowing, really, about our success of late. It's been great talking to you guys. Thanks, Ferg, Tim and Paul. And thanks to everyone for joining in. Nick will return very soon, when he's not driving buses. So yeah, it's like I say, we'll sort a show out at the end of the season to eulogise about the success of another season going forwards into the Premier League, about the amazing success of the ladies and the continued success of our youth teams and players coming through. So from myself and the panel, everyone else behind the scenes at the Red and Blue Review, thank you very much, and we'll see you all soon. Thank you.
Yeah. Good night, everyone. Take care. Up the Palace.
As their captain, Amy Everett, receives the medal of a champion around her neck, it's time for her to receive the trophy that she and her teammates have worked so, so hard for. The 2023-24 champions of the Barclays Women's Championship are Crystal Palace.